Okay, so we're carrying on volume five of Kashrut. Tonight we are going to be dealing with carrying on the theme that we started last week in terms of certain things which Chazal forbade us from eating due to the fact that they are manufactured, created, made by non-Jews, to prevent to sort of limit that interaction. Last week we spoke about Bishul Akum, which is something which was cooked by a non-Jew. And just have a look over here, found it. And you'll see we have the Mishnah and the Gemara lists a number of different categories. We have essentially five different categories of these foods where this Gezerah would apply. Tonight we're going to talk about the first two, probably won't get to the third. But we have Pat Akum, which is bread, which is made by a non-Jew. We have Chalav Akum, milk, which we'll talk about in detail. And there's also Gvinat Akum, special, there is a special Torah regarding cheese. And then Bishul Akum we spoke about last week, and wine, which is a category on its own, which we'll talk about in a future share as well. Now, what's more or less common to most of these categories that we are dealing with things which are not what you would traditionally call non-kosher food. We're talking about things which are kosher, as we discussed last week. We're talking about Bishul Akum is kosher. The food is not kosher, so then you have a different problem. But the food is kosher. But nonetheless, there is a xerah which was instituted here in order to cause certain separation, certain social distance. Let's just recap again the Mishnah, which we learned last week. We'll see actually that when we get to milk, it's slightly different in that, specifically regarding milk, that there may be a concern of non-kosher food, and therefore that one's actually going to be different to the rest of these other categories. It may be a kula, it may be a chumra. We'll see. So the Mishnah tells us again in source number one, Eilud Dvarim Shogoyim Asurim, the Einusolim Yisulana. Ah, so again, these are things which are, sorry, I'll just mute everybody so we don't have the background noise. So these are the things which are going to be forbidden, forbidden for consumption, not necessarily forbidden for any type of hanai, any type of benefit. And the reason why we have that distinction is, as we'll see later on, there's a category of wine which would also not be allowed for benefits at all. These things you can still benefit from, you just can't eat them. So that's the second topic we'll be discussing tonight. We have milk, which was milked by a non-Jew, and there was no Jew who was watching him or supervising. Also have pat, bread, the Hashem mentioned, and the Mishnah over here also mentions oil. We discussed last week that was a decree that was rescinded. It also talks about cooked foods, about Bishul Akum, which we already discussed. We won't go into again tonight. But the first category which we're going to cover is Pat Akum, which is bread, which was baked by a non-Jew. And again, in terms of all of these decrees, so the overall reason for them is what we call Mishum Chatnut. See the Rambam over here in his Perusha Mishnayot. Rambam tells us, Rove Eled Valim, most of these things which are included here, like bread and oil, bread and cooked foods and all these things, they were forbidden in order to that we should distance ourselves. He says, we shouldn't come too close and become too intermingled with the non-Jewish society. And that's what he says at the end. This is what the Gemara refers to as Mishum Chatnut. And we saw last week, the Gemara doesn't mention about each and every single one of these categories. The Rambam does expand that. He says all of these things have been in order to prevent intermarriage. The Shach over here tells us, Shach, one of the commentaries on the Shulchan Aruch, tells us, Mishum Giuleh Uvdei Kochavim Leke Lamecha. She says, yeah, we're not worried about, we're worried about the food themselves. We're not talking about ta'am, about the flavor, which may have been absorbed within the pot. If it's a pot which comes in, you know that it was used for only kosher things, we're not worried about that. Again, that's another indication that we're not dealing with a concern of the food itself is trash. We're talking about something bigger. So, as I said, the two things we want to talk about tonight are, first of all, bread and then milk. Let's start off with bread, pat akum. It's a halakha which is not always so well understood. Comes up by Rosh Hashanah. We'll get to that later as well. So the Shulchan Aruch tells us that, again, what we're dealing with over here, based on the Mishnah, is bread, which was baked by a non-Jew. And again, the assumption is that everything is kosher. And nowadays, it's not like, well, you know, once upon a time, we had bread. Bread was flour and water. There weren't any yeast. There weren't any other ingredients. Today, there are, it can be dozens of ingredients, if not more, in the industry. And therefore, you would have to know that there weren't any, you know, animal fats being used or anything which is non-kosher, which is being added in to the mixture. But once we know that, then we're dealing with pat akum, which is kosher bread, but it was baked by non-Jew. And Shulchan Aruch tells us, "Asur chachamim lechol pat shel amamim ofdei avodah zarah mishum chatnut," is that we are not allowed to eat the bread of idol worshippers. Again, over here, this would not, for the purpose of this halacha, would not make a difference if we're talking about idol worshippers or any other non-Jews. It would still be forbidden. Says the Rama, "Afilu makom deleika mishum chatnut asur." Says the reason for the decree was in order to prevent intermarriage. But says the Rama, even if you have a situation where that concern may not exist in a specific situation, it's nonetheless forbidden. This is an important point, and this will be very, very relevant. We'll see later on when we get to milk. In terms of once Chazal made a gzerah, and they gave us a reason for it, if we have a situation where perhaps that reason doesn't apply, would the halacha remain the same? Certainly in terms of this, in terms of Pat, the Rama tells us, yes, it would still remain the same, even in a situation that concern may not exist. In terms of bread specifically, however, we find a distinction, and the Gemara makes this distinction, between two different types of bread. What is what we call pat, ordinary bread, which is made by a private person. Again, in the days of the Gemara, many people were baking in private homes, you know, you didn't have supermarkets, you didn't have as industrial as it is today. However, there's also what's called pat palter, which means the bread of a baker, which was baked by somebody, today would be in a factory, in a bakery, a shop, etc., where it was made in order to be sold to the public. We see from the Gemara that there is a certain leniency when it comes to pat palter, bread from a baker, as opposed to bread just from the individual. Gemara here in source number 7, Sechel Avodah Zarah, tells us, says, Rav Yosef, Litem Rav Shmuel Bar Yehuda Amar, Lo Kach Haya Maaseh, a certain story which the Gemara is telling, and it says this is how it occurred. Amar Pam Achat Halach Rebbe Lemakom Echad, Rebbe Yehuda Hanasi, one of the great Tanaim, came to a certain place, Ra'a Patachuk L'Talmidim, he saw they didn't have anything to eat. And they saw they didn't have any bread. Amar Rabbi Einkan Palter, said, is there not a baker here? Now this is where it gets where the Gemara has to interpret exactly what he meant. And it says, Kasluena Am Lamar Palter Goy, Gulo Amar Ala Palter Yisrael. So what kind of baker was he referring to? There's a dispute whether he meant, was there a Jewish baker here who could provide you with bread, or even maybe saying, even if there's not a Jewish baker, there's a non-Jewish baker who could provide you. Says Rabbi Chalba, says, even according to, even if we say that Rabbi was asking, is there not even a non-Jewish baker, i.e. the implication that you would be allowed to eat bread which was baked by a non-Jewish baker? Says Rabbi Chalba, that would only apply in a case where there is no where there is no Jewish baker. We're a place where you can get bread easily available, which is not parakum, that would not be the case. So what we see from here, there, certainly from this Gemara, there is a certain leniency when it comes to what we call pat palter. And the reason behind it is, if we think about it, it's quite, if we say the reason for this gzera was because of intermarriage. Intermarriage, again, is going to be what was behind it. You know, somebody will bake bread, he'll invite you into his home, and, you know, through that, a sort of social interaction will occur, and that will ultimately lead to a closeness of the relationship and may lead to marriage at the end of the day. If it's just a baker who is, you know, that's his profession, he's baking the bread, he's selling it out, you know, you come, you buy the bread from him, you go home, there's no further interaction than that. Kind of like today, you go into a supermarket, you buy your bread, and you go home. and therefore there's a leniency. However, the Gemara does dispute how far the leniency goes. Certainly, what we see from the Gemara is that if there's a situation where there is no bread available, that would be Pat Yisrael, so then it would be allowed. Possible, according to another line of thinking, a way of understanding the Gemara, is that even if it is available, that would still be okay. So the Rambam over here, this was number 8. The Rambam, Afal Pisha Sulpat Goyim, Yesh Mokomot Shemakilin Bedavah. Says even though that there is this gezera which was made against the patanachum, there are places that are lenient about it. Lochin patanachum agoy, b'makom she'en shem nachtum Yisrael or basadeh b'nei shushat adcha. So either where there is no Jewish baker available and you can get from the non-Jewish baker, or basadeh in the field, out in places where that's all that's available, that would be a shat adcha. And again, he says that's regarding Pat Patel. But Pat Bale Batim, Ein Sham Yishem Ol Bale Akel, if it's just bread which was made in a private home, nobody would be lenient about it. Shekal Gzela Mishum Chatnot, as we've said, the main purpose of the decree was to prevent intermarriage, and that would still be, applicable in such a situation. Shachroch basically says, more or less word for word, it's a quote from the words of the Rambam. The Rambam adds in something. He says, "Lo mikrei pat bal habayit, ela im asa'o livnei beito, aval asa'o limkor mikrei parter." Says the Rambam that how do we define whether it is pat parter or pat bal habayit, whether it's considered bread of a baker or just bread of says it's not by who the person is, but it's by what the purpose of the bread was when he made it. He could be, somebody, even if he's a baker himself, he's a professional baker, but it's bread which he made not, on his day off, when he was at home, and it's what he intends to those people, that would still classify as pat bal habayit, as opposed to, and vice versa would be the same. Why is it that bread, that we find this distinction? Last week we spoke about bishalakum, which is just any ordinary cooked foods, and we wouldn't find leniencies like this. We didn't say that if you go to a restaurant, if you go to a caterer, if it's a non-Jewish caterer, whatever it is, that you can have some leniencies. It's only by bread that we find that Chazal sent us. It says the Shach, because bread is a special food. We actually find it many places in Halacha. This is also the reason why. Specifically on bread, we have a meal by bread, we do benching, and it has a different status, and it is a sort of a staple food. And the point was that without bread, people have to have something with which they can survive. Without bread, certainly in those days, nowadays it's a bit strange for us because the only time we eat bread to make sure that we have a meal, we wouldn't necessarily do it instinctively. We have all sorts of other foods that might make up our meals. But certainly in those days, bread was always called chayei nefesh. That's what the Shach brings over here, according to the Gemara. He says, bread is something which is food that keeps us alive, and therefore there were all sorts of leniencies which Chazal made in this decree. One of them, as we've said already, is the idea that pat palter would be allowed. Another one is that in terms of how we turn the bread from being pat akum into being pat Israel. And it's not that a Jew has to be involved in baking the bread completely. There's only a certain amount of involvement in the process. And this is based on the Gemara Rishonim, and the Shach quotes it over here. He says, "Ma'ita ma'kelu nami b'pat hashlachat keisam." It's called hashlachat keisam, which literally means throwing in a wood chip into the fire. And last week we discussed that meant the idea of turning on the fire for Bishul Akum, whether that would be enough. If a Jew was not doing the main part of the cooking, but he just turned on the fire, would that be enough to prevent it from having the states of Bishul Akum? And we said that there was a big machloket between the Shulchan Aruch and the Rambam. In terms of cooked foods, there is a machloket. In terms of bread, there is no machloket at all. And this is really the source of it, what the Shach is quoting, that if during the turn on the fire, he had, that's like that. That would be enough involvement in the baking process that it would be considered, it would not be considered pan akum anymore, that would be considered patichim. And that again is another reason why Chazal were more lenient on bread, because it is such a universal and such a staple food. In terms of the leniency of Pat Palter, as we saw in the Gemara, machloket amongst the poskim, do we say that Pat Palter would be allowed always, or would it be allowed only when you can't get from a Jewish baker? And therefore, according to all, if there is Pat Yisrael which is readily available, so that is preferable. However, many are lenient, so in Chutz La'aretz, many are lenient in terms of Pat Akum, especially if Pat Yisrael is not available, or even if it's of a better quality. Again, just to reiterate, that unlike in the days of the Gemara, a bread nowadays can have many, many different ingredients in it. And so we were only getting to the Pat Akum question once we know that something has, you know, the certain level of supervision in the factories, and that we actually know that we're dealing with food which is kosher. But once it's kosher, and then it would be, you know, on the list. Again, now we're saying there is another step here, that even if it's on the list, you know, that could still be pat akum, and therefore many would be stringent. Many would have the minhag not to eat it. One place where even for those who are lenient would eat pat akum, which is pat palter, as we've said, comes from a baker, is during the aseret yemei tshuva, and it's a halacha which is often quoted. And oftentimes we get to the aseret yemei tshuva between Rosh Hashanah and Yom Kippur, we quote this halacha about pat akum, and people already know what pat akum is. Now we know what pat akum is. We can relearn this halacha. This is the Shulchan Aruch in the Chodesh Rosh Hashanah. It tells us afmi she'eino nisam mipat shel goy, even a person who is lenient regarding pat akum throughout the year, aseret yemei tshuva tzarech lezaher. For these 10 days, we should be more stringent. And the Mishnah Berurah is quick to point out is that filumi palter shogoy. He's talking about dafka coming from a baker. But for those 10 days between Rosh Hashanah and Yom Kippur, and we take extra stringencies on ourselves, and we try not to be lenient in terms of that as well. Okay, that's more or less in terms of pat akum. There are also discussion of the poskim, which we won't get into now. Sometimes regarding cookies and cakes and other things which are similar to bread, would those be subject as well to pat or not? But that is that's where we'll leave it at the moment. Let's move on to milk, which is the second gezerah, chalav akum. And again, this is once again, it's in terms of the entire category of these halachot, which we said are to do with chatnut. The prohibition of intermarriage. Nowhere does the Gemara say specifically regarding chalav akum, regarding milk, which was milked by a non-Jew, that the concern is intermarriage. We saw the Rambam, who says that this whole category, which is listed in the Mishnah, and fits under that, and it makes sense, and that is part of that. But by milk specifically, there is another concern. Because there's another concern, as I said, there may be a reason to be more stringent, and may ironically be a reason to be more lenient. But the other concern is that the food may actually be non-kosher. That there is a concern regarding milk that we're not worried that the farmer, whoever it is, would have exchanged the kosher milk for non-kosher milk, because the Gemara here explains that when it comes to non-kosher milk, it has a slightly different tinge to it, a slightly different color, and that would be easily identifiable. What would not be so easily identifiable is if he were to mix it in. If he were to take some of the non-kosher milk, which may be cheaper, and add it together to the milk from the kosher animal, then we may have a situation where inadvertently you're buying milk, which you think is kosher, and it's actually not, and you're eating non-kosher food. So this is, in terms of that, this is much more serious, but more serious than the other gzerot, which may lead to intermarriage. Over here, so we're talking about the food itself, which is which could be non-kosher. This is what we have the Rambam of Yanechot Machalot Asurot. And what he tells us in Sotah 13. He says, "V'bnei zeh yiten adin, shekol chalav v'nimtza b'yad goy asur, shema yarev bo chalav be'emat me'ah." That any milk which is which was owned, which was milk by a non-Jew, is going to be forbidden. Because we're worried that it has actual milk which came from pig or camel or whatever animal it is, and that's non-kosher, that's going to be mixed in there. And that's what the Shulchan Aruch says as well. Chalav shechalav agoy ve'en Yisrael oel asul shema yarobo chalav tameh. So if we have a situation where a non-Jew milk and there was no Jew who was watching, no Jew was supervising, that would be forbidden, because he may have added in, may have mixed in something non-kosher. It says the Rama, unlike what we saw previously, where at the beginning we saw the Shach, this is not going to be a prohibition on the kelim, on the pots which you might use. Over here, he says, "Osarat kelim shnim pashlav b'em kishar isul." This is like any other isul, any other prohibition, because it's going to be non-kosher food, which is going to be absorbed in the pots. Now the question is there any time when we can be lenient about this? And before we get to modern days, we've seen modern days there's a big question. This is over the last 100 years, this has been debated quite vigorously. Before that, already going into the Gemara and going into the Rishonim, there are sources which indicate that there might be circumstances where even this the chalav, the milk of a non-Jew, might be allowed. So let's see the Gemara. The Gemara here in Avodah Zarah, so the from the tells us. Tanin la'adit anu abanan yoshev Yisrael b'tzadet rosh shel oved kochavim. Oved kochavim cholev lo, u'mevi lo v'nochoshesh. So if there is a Jew who is sitting, you have a mashkeh, you have the non-Jew milking his flock, but you have a Jew sitting there and he's a mashkeach. He's sitting and he's watching and he can see what he's bringing him, so there is no concern. The Gemara then says, what is the case? What are we talking about? Eichidami. Either leka davar tamei bedlo, shita. Vidika davar tamei bedlo, amai. So he says, what is the case? Well, let's say, he has a flock, of cattle, and if he doesn't have any non-kosher animals in his flock, and so obviously it's going to be allowed if the Jew is sitting on the side and he's watching what's going on. There's no, where's he going to get the non-kosher milk from? There's no concern. And then the Quran says, but if he has a non-kosher animal in his flock, then why should it be allowed? Then maybe there was something that the Jew couldn't see. So he says, "Le'olam di'ikar davatame." He says to Gemara, this halacha is said in a situation where the non-Jew does have a non-kosher animal in his flock, but the Jew was watching him. V'kikar chazile, v'chiyativ lo chazile. This is when he was wherever he was from his point of view. If the Jew, if he stood up, he could see exactly where he was milking from. But if he sat down, he couldn't see exactly. So mal d'tema, you might have thought, "Kevad yativ lo chazile." Once he sat down, you couldn't actually see him. Nechush Dilma might do Malav Bay. Might have thought at that time when he's Mashkeach, he's taking his rest, and then I'm just gonna go and he's gonna top up the bottles, whatever it is, with the non kosher milk. Kamashmalan Kaivan the ki kai chazile il tute miltat vlome alif bay. Says no. The fact that there's a Jew standing there watching, even though he doesn't see him at every second, every possible moment, the fact that he knows he's there, he's watching, he's supervising, there is what we call mirtat. There is a certain fear, to do something which would be discovered and which would be discovered later on. And therefore, he's not going to come along and mix in non-kosher milk. This concept of mirtat we see a lot in Hilchot Kashrut, it comes up many times, in terms of laws of hashkacha, of supervision, and even though you don't see every single thing and every single step that's going on every second, nonetheless, there is a, by the fact, the person knows that he's going to come in and he can see, so he'd be fearful and he wouldn't mix anything. So what we have from the Gemara over there is that if there is oversight, if a Jew is supervising, certainly the milk would be okay, would be kosher. If he's supervising in such a way that you can't see every single thing, but nonetheless he's generally supervising, that would still be okay. But the Mordechai comes along over here and he says, based on the fact that Gemara made a distinction between a non-Jew who had where he had a non-kosher animal in his flock, or he didn't have a non-kosher animal in his flock. And says maybe, at least there are those who understand from here, from this distinction, that if there was, again, the leniency which the Gemara gave us here, where the Jew was watching, was even where there was a non-kosher animal in the flock. It was feasible that he could come along and mix in non-kosher milk. What if there was a situation where there was no non-kosher animal in the flock, it was all kosher, and there was no one, and even then there was nobody watching, there was no Jew who was supervising, and maybe then the Mordechai brings that opinion, and he said, there are those who think that would be okay, even though there's no one watching, it's just an non-Jew, but because there is no non-kosher milk there, because there's no non-kosher animal, maybe it would be allowed. So if he answers number 25, there are those who prove from here. And again, the Mordechai does not accept this to halakha himself, but he quotes that there is such an opinion. That if we know that there is no non-kosher animal in the flock, the that you could take the milk from him from this man, even though no one is watching him. And this is now he says this is a mistake. If that was the case, he says, then the Gemara would have said differently. If that was the case, the Gemara would have said that if there was no non-kosher animal in the flock, then why do you need a Jew sitting there watching at all? So he ultimately rejects that, but we see that. But there's a discussion that what if the non-Jew doesn't have any non-kosher animal, it's that much more unlikely, it's that much further removed that he would have the non-kosher milk to mix in. So we'll see in a moment where the Achronim take it. The Shulchan Aruch over here says, again, just to summarize what we saw so far, if the non-Jew was milking inside his home and the Jew was sitting outside, then if it's known that there is no non-kosher animal in the flock, that would be allowed. Again, but that's where the Jew is there, he's sitting outside, and he's in some way sort of supervising. Now, we'll fast forward a few hundred years, and we get to the pre-Chadash. And essentially what the pre-Chadash says, and this goes back to the question that we asked right at the beginning of the shiur, which is, once Chazal came along, made a gzerah, made a decree, and gave us a reason for that. Again, yeah, the reason is, we're worried that you might mix in non-kosher milk, together with the kosher milk. Once that reason no longer applies, you have a way of knowing that it's not going to be the case, would the gzerah still apply? Pre-Chadash leads a school of thought. He's right in the 17th century. But here is leads a school of thought. I was going to say that no, it would not apply. Once the reason isn't relevant, the gzera in this case won't be relevant. And therefore he says, where if you have a situation where not just in that specific flock, but in the entire vicinity, you know, however we're going to define that. But it's a bit further, it's a bit expanded from just one private flock. But it's in the entire vicinity, and it's very, very unlikely that there's going to be a non-kosher milk which could be mixed in, that would be allowed. This is chalav tameh non nimtza makom. In this entire area, there is no non-kosher milk, or shenimtza ein shu yoter b'yokem chalav tahor, but there is, but it's going to be more expensive. Again, why the person is going to be lying over here about his milk because he wants to save money. If he's not going to save money, he can apply.